This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
So, Mr. Incredible, do you have a secret identity?
Every superhero has a secret identity. I don't know a single one who doesn't. Who wants the pressure of being super all the time?
That's Craig T. Nelson as Mr. Incredible, the father in a family of superheroes in the Academy Award-winning film The Incredibles. It's now out on DVD, and my guest is the creator, writer, and director of the film, Brad Bird. As film critic Michael Schrago wrote, Bird is known in the cartoon world as a visionary. He also made the animated film The Iron Giant and worked on the TV series The Simpsons, The Critic, and King of the Hill. The Incredibles tells the story of two superheroes, Mr. Incredible and Elastigirl, who get married and have three children with superpowers. But they're forced to abandon their valiant efforts fighting crime and rescuing the innocent after they are literally sentenced to a life in the suburbs where they must pretend to be average. This news report at the start of The Incredibles explains why.
In a stunning turn of events, a superhero is being sued for saving someone who apparently didn't want to be saved. The plaintiff, Oliver Sansweet, who was foiled in his attempted suicide by Mr. Incredible, has filed suit against the famed superhero in Superior Court.
Mr. Sansweet didn't ask to be saved. Mr. Sansweet didn't want to be saved. And the injury received from Mr. Incredible's actions, so-called, causes him daily pain.
Hey, I saved your life!
You didn't save my life, you ruined my debt! That's what you
listen,
my client has no further comment at this time.
5 days later, another suit was filed by the victims of the L-Train accident. Incredible's court losses cost the government millions. And open the floodgates for dozens of superhero lawsuits the world over.
It is time for their secret identity to become their only identity. Time for them to join us or go away.
Under tremendous public pressure and the crushing financial burden of an ever-mounting series of lawsuits, the government quietly initiated the Superhero Relocation Program. The supers would be granted amnesty from responsibility for past actions in exchange for the promise to never again resume hero work. Where are they now? They are living among us, average citizens, average heroes, quietly and anonymously continuing to make the world a better place.
Brad Bird, welcome to Fresh Air. How did you come up with the premise for The Incredibles, the premise of the superheroes who have to go into the witness protection program and live quietly and anonymously as if they were average people?
Well, I started with the Bob character, and I think we've all known people who are still pretty young, and yet they kind of peaked early. They had the high point of their life happened maybe a little too early. And, you know, the kind of guy that was the star quarterback in high school and you know, has never been able to recapture that moment ever since. So I kind of wondered, what if that character were a superhero? And he was still, you know, in the prime of his life, but had to stop being a superhero. And then, so once you have that, you know, thought, you just start asking questions, you know. You know, why did he have to quit? Are there other superheroes? Did they have to quit? Is he married? Is she a superhero? Do they have kids? Do those kids have superpowers? And it just kind of kept going from there.
How did you decide what superpowers to give the characters?
I tried to base it on family archetypes. You know, like the dad is always expected to be strong, so I made him very strong. Moms are always pulled in 1,000 different directions, so I had her kind of, you know, able to stretch. Teenagers are defensive and you know, oftentimes very self-conscious about themselves, so I had her be invisible and have protective shields. 10-year-old boys are energy balls that are bouncing off the wall, so I had him have super speed. And babies are unrealized potential. So, you know what I mean? You could either have great powers or no powers at all.
If you were a superhero, what powers would you want?
I would want the ability to conjure up financing for any idea I could come up with.
What a great superpower.
Super finance man. Yeah.
And in public radio, that would be super grant person.
There you
or
go.
Or super underwriting person.
Yes.
Did you ever watch the old episodes of the original TV series Superman?
Yeah, sure, with George Reeves.
Exactly.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I love those old shows, and it's amazing how unadventurous they are in their own way. You know, like
I imagine they wouldn't hold up too well.
Like one of his arch rivals would be like the strong man who throws a really large ball at him.
You know? Well, it's all got to be within the TV budget, you know.
So, yeah. Were you alluding to any of those episodes early in the movie when Mr. Incredible is driving around the city and stopping crime?
I wasn't trying to allude to anything specifically, but just a general feeling of, you know, this is a city filled with superheroes and there are bad doings going on and, you know, the people necessary to shut them down. I think that I also wanted to show that, you know, there were several superheroes walking this beat and they all kind of knew each other, almost like punching into work, you know.
My guest is Brad Bird, and he wrote and directed The Incredibles, and he also directed Iron Giant. They're both on DVD now. Now, you're the voice of the costume designer in The Incredibles, and this is the character who's similar to the character in the James Bond movies who designs and then demonstrates all the new gizmos that Bond can use to, like, fend off his
right.
Arch rivals. But, you know, what she does is she designs those special protective costumes for the superheroes to wear.
Right. We've never really addressed that, have we? You know, they always showed the hero. I mean, the few times anybody bothered to explain where they got the costumes, they always showed the muscle-bound hero, like, sewing in the basement, suddenly, you know, showing his sensitive side. And I just didn't buy that. So I thought, somebody's got to be designing these things. And it's got to be a cross between a sort of flamboyant designer, because the costumes are flamboyant, and a scientist. So, yeah, that's kind of where E came from.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, what you're saying about the costumes is, you know, why tights? Why tights and a cape? Why is that such a popular superhero costume?
I think it's flourishy. I think that's got to be it. It's something you can fling around dramatically and let blow in the wind. But it's not very practical. I mean, it's very much kind of, you know, Isadora Duncan. You know. I think so.
For interpretive superheroes.
Yes.
But it's funny because you really get to this in the movie, you know, like the designer refuses to use capes in her superhero costumes because they're so impractical. They always get caught just as you're supposed to be rescuing somebody.
Right. Yes. She's a practical designer.
So why did you want to do the voice for this character who's a woman?
Well, I didn't set out to do it. We do temporary soundtracks here at Pixar. I think most places probably do, but we cast within the building when we're kind of designing the story reels. So, you know, with a company that has 600 employees, as Pixar does, you can actually cast pretty well within the building. And I did like three different voices for the temp reels, thinking that all of them were going to get replaced. I did Bob, and I did Syndrome, and I did E, and everybody seemed to like E and connect with her the way that I did her, so we just kind of left her in.
Well, let's hear a scene from The Incredibles in which we'll hear you as E, the costume designer for the superheroes. And in this scene, she's demonstrating all these new costumes that that she's created for the Incredible family. What she doesn't realize is that Mrs. Incredible, who she is demonstrating these costumes to, doesn't know that Mr. Incredible is back in the superhero world and actually commissioned a new uniform because
he's been moonlighting.
Yeah,
yes.
He's been moonlighting on assignment. So here's the scene.
I started with the baby.
Started?
Started. I cut it a little roomy for the free movement. The fabric is comfortable for sensitive skin. And can also withstand the temperature of over 1,000 degrees. Completely bulletproof. And machine washable, darling. That's a new feature.
What on earth do you think the baby will be doing?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, darling. Luck favors the prepared. I didn't know the baby's powers, so I covered the basics.
Jack-Jack doesn't have any powers.
No? Well, could look fabulous anyway. Your boy's suit are designed to withstand enormous friction without heating up or wearing out, a useful feature. Your daughter's suit is tricky. but I finally created a sturdy material that will disappear completely as she does. Your sword can stretch as far as you can without injuring yourself, and still retain its shape. Virtually indestructible. It breathes like Egyptian cotton. As an extra feature, each suit contains a homing device, giving you the precise global location of the wearer at the touch of a button. Well, darling, what do you think?
What do I think? Bob is retired. I'm retired. Our family is underground. You helped my husband resume secret hero work behind my back?
I assumed you knew, darling. Why would he keep secrets from you?
That was my guest, Brad Bird, as the voice of E, the costume designer in The Incredibles. Now, was the image already drawn for the costume designer when you started to do the voice? Like, what comes first?
Well, yes, we design the characters first. We know what their function is, and we have a sense of where they're going to be in the story and all that's going to be demanded of them. But we kind of decide how they look first and just take it from there. You know, and I found myself falling into that voice. The character designers, Tony Fucilli and Teddy Newton, remind me that when I was talking to them about how E should look, that I would fall into that voice. And I was just trying to describe a certain character to, you know, this is how the character is. She's like this. And they would draw, you know, with that sort of in their brain. You're just trying to think of ways to describe, you know, a character that seems clear to you, you've never seen it before. I mean, it's a type, but it's also kind of a unique blend of things.
Have you done voices for other movies or TV shows that you've worked on?
You know, I did the dog barks in Family Dog. we did the first thing that I ever directed was an episode of Steven Spielberg's show Amazing Stories called Family Dog, and I did all the dog sounds in that. And I actually got more money from residuals for doing the barks and stuff like that than I did for writing it and directing it.
Huh.
Yeah. There's the animation union for you.
So what's the process like when you're casting voices, like finding Holly Hunter and Craig T. Nelson for Elastigirl and Mr. Incredible?
Well, I think it's like any film. You're trying to find somebody whose voice takes you somewhere and does something specific. I think that a lot of people who make animated films think that big celebrity names is going to, you know, mean something in terms of box office or I don't know what. But there is no correlation. There have been films with really big actors that have just tanked and animated films with really small actors that have done very well. And there's some wonderful actors who I wouldn't hesitate to work with in live action who I would not want to be a voice in animation because their voice is not that distinctive. There's nothing grabby enough about it. It doesn't pull you in. And you really need to have that because what takes an actor 5 seconds to say, it's going to take an animator a month to animate. And that animator is going to hear that line over and over and over again. So there has to be something really there to juice up an animator and inspire the animators to do the best visual performance they can do.
One thing that I think works really well about Craig T. Nelson is he has that sense of being like macho and kind of suburban and conventional at the same time, kind of like his character on Coach.
Yeah, he has a tremendous amount of range, and I think that this film, in its weird way, because it's animated, has reminded people of the range that he's capable of. I think that he sounds big and can sound heroic when he needs to, but he also sounds like he could live next door to you. And I just thought he did a tremendous job. And the animators just absolutely loved animating to him because there were all these nuances in his voice. And, you know, he could sound absolutely like he could take your head off 1 second and totally confused and like a little boy the next. And You know, I was just really happy with all the voices in our film. And I, you know, I'm a huge Holly Hunter fan, huge Sam Jackson fan. Jason Lee's great. You know, I just, they did an extraordinary job.
What did you like about Holly Hunter's voice?
Holly Hunter, to me, besides being just, you know, one of the best actresses we have now, I think that what struck me is that her voice can be very vulnerable, but underneath it all, there's something that's tough as nails, and you just feel like she's just this very strong, diamond-hard, you know, she's got her feet planted, and you don't feel like you could blow her around this way or that.
Let's hear a scene with Craig T. Nelson and Holly Hunter.
I thought you'd be back by 11.
I said I'd be back later.
I assumed you'd be back later. If you came back at all, you'd be back later.
Well, I'm back.
Okay.
Is this rubble?
It was just a little workout. Just stay loose.
You know how I feel about that, Bob. Darn you, we can't blow cover again.
The building was coming down anyway.
What? You knocked down a building?
It was on fire, structurally unsound. It was coming down anyway.
Tell me you haven't been listening to the police scanner again.
Look, I performed a public service. You act like that's a bad thing.
It is a bad thing, Bob. Uprooting our family again so you can relive the glory days is a very bad thing.
Reliving the glory days is better than acting like they didn't happen.
Yes, they happened. But this, our family, is what's happening now, Bob. And you are missing this. I can't believe you don't want to go to your own son's graduation.
It's not a graduation. He is moving from the fourth grade to the fifth grade.
It's a ceremony.
It's psychotic. They keep creating new ways to celebrate mediocrity. But if someone is genuinely exceptional,
then
this is not
about you, Bob. This is about Dash.
You want to do something for Dash? Then let him actually compete. Let him go out for sports.
I will not be made the enemy here. You know why we can't do that.
Because it'd be great.
This is not about you!
That's Craig T. Nelson and Holly Hunter in a scene from The Incredibles. My guest is the writer and director of the film, Brad Bird, and The Incredibles is now out on DVD. I was really glad to hear the voice of Sarah Vowell in the movie because, among other things, Sarah Vowell is a contributor to the public radio program This American Life.
Yes.
And,
great
how did,
show.
Now, she is not a professional actress. How did you think of her for the role as the teenage daughter?
Well, not to put in a plug for NPR, but I'm a big fan of This American Life, and I'd listened to it quite a few years, and I was aware of her, and I was aware of the pieces that she'd written and thought she was terrific. But I was listening to the radio driving along when we were casting the film, and I went, that's Violet. And we asked her, we tracked her down, and we actually animated a little piece of animation to a segment from This American Life where she's blowing off cannons or something with her father. And we, just to show that it could work, we animated a little kind of an early version of Violet to that little piece of sound. And we asked Sarah to be a part of it. And at first her agent was like, she doesn't do this. She's serious, you know, writer. And, you know, I'm not going to take this to her. If you want to go to her, you can, but I'm not going to bring it to her. So we went to Sarah and said, hey, you know, your agent has been properly, you know, he's thrown water on us, so he's done his job, but we'd love it if you'd be a part of this. And she was just, you know, thrilled. She came down and we showed her that test and we shot some stuff from, recorded some lines from the film with her, and it just worked really well, and we had a blast, and I think she's great.
Yeah, me too. Let's hear a scene from The Incredibles with Sarah Vowell as the teenage daughter.
I'm not the only kid who's been sent to the office, you know.
Other kids don't have superpowers. Now, it's perfectly normal.
Normal? What do you know about normal? What does anyone in this family know about normal?
Now, wait a minute, young lady.
We act normal, Mom. I want to be normal. The only normal one is Jack-Jack, and he's not even toilet trained.
Loki. Oh, I meant about being normal.
We heard Sarah Vowell in a scene from The Incredibles. It's now out on DVD and includes many extras, including a piece by Sarah Vowell about her experiences making the film. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Brad Bird. He created, wrote, and directed the Academy Award-winning film The Incredibles. It's now out on DVD with lots of extras. Let's hear another scene from it. This family of superheroes has been forced by society to suppress their superpowers and live like an average suburban family. The Incredibles' son, Dash, has been having trouble in school. Here he is in the car with his mother, Helen Parr, a.k.a. Elastigirl, voiced by Holly Hunter.
Dash, this is the third time this year you've been sent to the office. We need to find a better outlet, a more constructive outlet.
Maybe I could, if you'd let me go out for sports.
Honey, you know why we can't do that.
But I promise I'll slow up. I'll only be the best by a tiny bit.
Dashiell Robert Parr, you are an incredibly competitive boy. And a bit of a show-off. The last thing you need is temptation.
You always say, do your best, but you don't really mean it. Why can't I do the best that I can do?
Right now, honey, the world just wants us to fit in. And to fit in, we just gotta be like everybody else.
But Dad always said our powers are nothing to be ashamed of. Our powers made us special.
Everyone's special, Dash.
Which is another way of saying no one is.
In addition to writing and directing The Incredibles, my guest Brad Bird also wrote and directed the animated film The Iron Giant and worked on the TV series The Simpsons, The Critic, and King of the Hill. What exactly does the director do in an animated feature?
This is the famous question that always pushes my buttons. Basically, a animation director does the important part of the animation director's job is exactly the same as a live action film. You're still dealing with performances. You're still dealing with does the audience understand what the character is thinking from moment to moment? You're still staging stuff in the frame. You're still talking to the production designer about color and how color flows from one sequence to another. You still talk to the musicians about what the style of music you want is. You know, for instance, on this film, I wanted kind of a retro style, like spy movies and adventure movies from the early 60s.
With bongos.
Bongos. Got to have bongos. But all of those things, you know, when you're dealing with, when you're recording the voices, you're talking to the actors about what the character is feeling and what we need to hear in the voice and when to play with the script directly the way it's going or when to play against it. And it's all of the same stuff. What's different is that it takes longer. You're under a roof so that you don't have to deal with weather. You're segmented. Your performance is, you have to direct the actors doing the voice one half of the performance, and then you have to direct the visual half with the animators. But still, you're saying that gesture is too busy. Simplify it. Slow down that turn so that we can see his eye at this point. And, you know, I'm not getting the feeling of pain here. He's saying something that is positive, but he feels pain about it. So it's all the kinds of stuff that you would do in telling a story, any story.
Now, you've worked with hand-drawn animation, like on The Simpsons, and you've
Yes.
worked with computer-generated animation, like in The Incredibles. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of each?
Well, I think the advantage to hand-drawn animation is that if an idea occurs to you or a character occurs to you, you can just draw it. If you suddenly realize you need to have a new character or a new scene, you could draw it in a day or two and give those drawings to a talented animator, and they could start animating right away. In CG animation, computer graphics animation, the building of the character part takes months and months and months and months because all of the controls that define how the muscles move and how, you know, the facial controls, there's something like 160 controls in the face alone. All of those have to be tried and bugs have to be found, and it takes forever. Now, once you have those characters built, though, animation goes a little faster in CG than it does in hand-drawn. And it is more flexible in terms of being able to reiterate. If you animate a scene one way and want to adjust a couple of things, it's much easier in CG to do it because you're not dealing with drawings. You're just dealing with information that you can change how that information gets defined, you know. I would say both of them are hard. Both of them are long processes. But CG has more flexibility in terms of the camera work and reiterating. And hand-drawn has more flexibility in terms of getting it going much more quickly. But see, here I am talking about this kind of stuff, and this is just feeding into the super technical, viewpoint of animation. And I know it's fascinating because it's technical, but it also, you know, that's beside the point. The point is, do you care about the characters? Are you drawn into the story? And are we surprising you as filmmakers? And that's the real, that's what separates the good films from the other films. You know, in hand-drawn animation, they would always say, if you laid each drawing end to end, they would go to Pluto and back three times. Well, that doesn't, you know, you could do a billion bad drawings, and it won't even transport you to want to keep the thing on. You know, you'll turn it off if it is not interesting or involving. But people always want to go there with animation, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my test is kind of, am I enjoying the images, but at the same time forgetting that I'm watching something animated and thinking I'm watching people?
Yeah, and that's the big thing, I think, is did we make you forget you were watching, animated film? And I was really gratified that so many people came up to me after this saying that, you know, that they forgot it was animation, like, a minute into the film, and that they were genuinely worried about our little digital creations and were they going to make it through, the missile attack and all this stuff.
Right. Because you have to create, animated versions of people, do you find yourself studying people really carefully and to see, like, how does the mouth move when you smile? What happens to the shoulder when you sit?
Yeah, I think that's a particular thing that animators do. Animators are observers, and everybody's different, but if you were to generalize about a type of person, animators tend to be the kind that hang back and kind of watch. And they're oftentimes really funny people, very talented, because they have to be good at so many different things. But they also are great mimics, a lot of them. They can imitate themselves, almost like, you know, Marcel Marceau or somebody. They can imitate people walking, and everybody has a unique walk, and everybody has a unique way of picking up a glass of water or doing anything, any activity that you can name. And that's something that oftentimes is not in animation. That's really only in great animation, is the individual way that people move.
My guest is Brad Bird, and he wrote and directed The Incredibles, which is now out on DVD. And he also wrote and directed Iron Giant, which is also out on DVD. What were some of the cartoons and animated movies that you grew up on?
Well, you know, all the classics, you know, Bugs Bunny. You got to have Bugs Bunny in there for any balanced diet. It wasn't much in the animation department, but I loved Rocky and Bullwinkle because it was so absurd. And a lot of those writers went on to do Mary Tyler Moore, you know. So I really thought Jay Ward cartoons were funny. And I loved Disney, you know. I was transported by Disney, you know. The great old Disney films done during Walt's lifetime, I was just dazzled by.
You got started working at Disney. Did you work with any of the older animators who made some of the classics?
Absolutely. And my first teachers in animation were those guys. I started animating at the age of 11, and I finished my first film 3 years later, almost 14. And I sent it down to them, and they were just starting to realize that they didn't have anybody to replace those guys, because all the studios had closed down their animation divisions except for Disney, and nobody was being taught full animation. It was all this television stuff. So they brought me, they kind of opened their doors to me and invited me to work with Milt Kahl, who was one of the nine old men. And I got to know Milt and Eric Larson and Frank Thomas and Ollie Johnston and to a lesser extent, Mark Davis and Ward Kimball and a lot of those guys.
What were the nine old men that you refer to?
That they were nicknamed the Nine Old Men by Walt Disney. They were a group of animators that basically were the core group that went from film to film. Really, there weren't nine. I mean, there were nine, but mainly it was a group of about five or six of them that were on all the films. And they were responsible from everything from Snow White through Fox and the Hound.
So what was some of the best advice Milt Kahl gave you when you were getting started?
He really beat into me that even though he was an outstanding draftsman, you know, I would say to him, you know, "Oh, man, you're the most amazing draftsman ever, Mr. Kahl." And he'd say, "Well, Jesus, I'm not that good a draftsman. I don't quit so easy, you know." And that was really what he pounded in my head, was that these guys just didn't let go of their scenes. They just went back and went back and went back and really tried to plus them and make the most entertaining, character-oriented statement at every moment. And if you look at a film like Lady and the Tramp, the scene where Tramp meets Jacques and Trusty and Lady, every single one of those dogs, you can not only tell which ones have collars and which ones don't by the way they move, but you can tell which ones are old and which ones are young, which ones are male and which ones are female. And I'm talking about if you black them in so that they were silhouettes. It is so broken down perfectly on how someone moves when they feel legitimate and the freedom that the one without a collar feels to just flop down in the middle of the yard and own the place. That kind of analysis in animation is just extraordinary and very inspiring to me.
You worked on The Simpsons for a few years. And
I did.
Yeah,
eight seasons.
Whoa, that's a long time.
Yeah.
What were your jobs with the show?
I suppose the simplest way to describe what I did was I directed the directors. The show, Jim Brooks and Sam Simon and Matt Groening had seen Family Dog, which I did for Amazing Stories. And they liked the fact that even though the characters were very designy, that the filmmaking was more like a live-action film. There were long takes and jump cuts and extreme high angles. So they brought me in to write on one of the scripts, write a script or two, and kind of help the show work visually. Once I got there, I realized, you know, they don't need any help in the writing department at all. I'm there to learn, you know, just plunk me down and let me watch all these great writers at work. Where I could help them, though, was in selling their ideas visually. We did not have the kind of budget or schedule that we could do really sophisticated animation. But we did have enough time to do sophisticated storytelling. So I got in there and tried to get the board artist to be more influenced by great filmmakers. You know, I had them look at Kubrick and David Lean and Woody Allen and all kinds of things to get the visual storytelling to be on the same level as the writing. And it was really rewarding for me. It was like going to film school boot camp, because we had, in the course of my time there, I worked on probably 180 stories, all of which had beginnings and middles and endings and real problems that had to be solved, you know, before we left the room, because the next episode was coming down the conveyor belt. So I really, a lot of what I learned on working on The Simpsons, I was able to apply in both Iron Giant and The Incredibles.
Do you have a favorite moment or favorite character on The Simpsons that you worked hard on?
I loved Krusty the Clown. And
Krusty's
I grew
great.
Up in Yeah, I grew up in Oregon, so I actually knew that the clown that Krusty was very loosely based on. And I went up to Matt and said, is that based on Rusty Nails? And he was like, you know Rusty Nails? And I mean, he's nothing like Rusty Nails. He's a lot more decrepit. But
well, he's a borscht belt clown.
Yeah, he's a borscht belt clown, and he's you know, for some reason, he never really takes the makeup off, and I just think he's really bizarre, and yet I really empathize with him in some weird way, even though he's pretty much kind of a despicable character. Any chance I had to work with him, I loved, and I also loved Sideshow Bob.
So what is one of the things that you contributed to Krusty lore?
It was not really gags per se. It was more like the way he kind of held up his arms and moved around and related. I ended up asking for scenes where he would go kind of insane in the course of a scene. There was a scene in one of the Halloween episodes where Bart makes him just do the Krusty Show 24 hours a day for like a week straight, and he starts having a nervous breakdown. And so I requested that scene to show him just having this nervous breakdown. And I think that a lot of animators based what they did with him afterwards on that.
One last question. You know, The Incredibles is now on DVD with a lot of cool extras in it. There's outtakes. There's a couple of shorts that, you know, haven't played in theaters, and there are interviews and so on. Sarah Vowell has a thing on there. Is it something that you enjoy, or is it just like more work to do to have to go into a movie knowing that there's going to have to be all these extras and commentaries eventually for the DVD version?
Well, I would say it's a little bit of both. I would say for the most part, it's a blast because, you know, we like making films and we like playing with ideas. And any chance we get to have a little bit of real estate to play around, we're going to take it, you know. Most of the people who work here at Pixar have big DVD collections themselves and enjoy DVDs. So we enjoy making extra stuff. The drag part about it is that the schedules on these things are getting so crunched that we are just barely hitting the tape finishing the film, and we've got to, you know, run another 4 miles for the DVD, and we're tired, you know. So I would say that part of it is not so great. I wish we had a little more time at the end of the film process, but as far as doing the extra stuff, we enjoy it. You know, we like, this is a fun job.
Well, Brad Bird, thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you.
Terry, it's been a great pleasure. I love this show.
Brad Bird wrote and directed The Incredibles.
No matter how many times you save the world, it always manages to get back in jeopardy again. I mean, sometimes I just want it to stay saved, you know, for a little bit. I feel like the maid. I just cleaned up this mess. Can we keep it clean for 10 minutes?
The Incredibles is now out on DVD with lots of extras. This is Fresh Air.